You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, October 27th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, three people dead. Three people remain in the hospital in a school shooting near Seattle, in Seattle. Also on the program today, just about 7 days now from the midterm elections, races tightening across the country. Jeb Bush's son says we may have a Bush to deal with in 2016. Meanwhile, New York City tops the number of homeless. U.S. workers take the least vacation time in 40 years. It's the Ebola election, folks. Watch as unscrupulous politicians placate the fear, the irrational fears of Americans. Meanwhile, new reports, CIA, other intelligence services protected at least 1,000 Nazis into the 90s from prosecution. Yeah. Nation Magazine.
Nation they help Magazine. You with the intelligence.
Nation Magazine endorses the WFP line. I will talk about my dilemma. I'm really torn over this.
You do not like Andrew Cuomo.
Oh, my God. Chris Christie does a double backup over the last couple of days, one on his Ebola program and one on his minimum wage comments. And Louis Gohmert. Thank God for Louis Gohmert. We're going to have some laughs with him later in the program. And is the CIA and the administration slow walking the release of the CIA torture report in hopes of a Republican takeover of the Senate? All that and more on today's program. Before we get to the fake fears, let's talk about a city that is addressing something to be genuinely afraid about. Fed up with lack of action by Florida lawmakers, the city of South Miami has passed a resolution calling for the state to be split in two, allowing for a South Florida and a North Florida so that the southern half of Florida can actually begin to implement policies to deal with the forthcoming climate change disaster they are facing. The resolution reads, South Florida's situation is very precarious and in need of immediate attention. The creation of the 51st state, South Florida, is a necessity for the very survival of the entire southern region of the current state of Florida. Resolution passed 3-2 in a city commission meeting. Of course, this is not binding. But it's just basically a cry for help. Vice Mayor Walter Harris introduced the proposal and said, we have to be able to deal directly with this environmental concern, and we can't really get it done in Tallahassee. I don't care what people think. It's not a matter of electing the right people. If approved, the state of South Florida would consist of 23 counties, many of which are as low as 5 feet above sea level. Dangerous scenario, as sea levels are expected to rise 3 to 6 feet by the end of the century. And we've talked about on this program, we had a writer, his name escapes me for the moment, from Rolling Stone on, I don't know, several months ago. Maybe it was over a year ago.
Jeff Goodell. Goodbye, Miami.
Talking about the unique problems that Miami in particular faces. They've brought in engineers from Amsterdam to see if their system of dikes would help. And it won't. Miami and other areas in South Florida are basically built on limestone. It's incredibly porous, and the water just seeps up from the ground. The resolution reads, South Florida has very porous rock, and as the sea level rises, the pressure will cause water to rise up through the ground and flood the inland areas. Many of the issues facing South Florida are not political, but are now significant safety issues. Presently, in order to address the concerns of South Florida, it's necessary to travel to Tallahassee in North Florida. Often, South Florida issues do not receive the support of Tallahassee. This is despite the fact that South Florida generates more than almost 70% of the state's revenue and contains almost 70% of the state's population. So there's some politicians addressing a real concern. Now let's move on to two politicians addressing only the most ignorant of fears of their electorate. Is there anything more grotesque than Andrew Cuomo and Chris Christie having a joint press conference? I'd argue no. You'll recall Thursday night, I believe it was. So Thursday night, following the finding of a doctor who had returned from West Africa. It was in, where did he come from? Guinea, I believe it was. He was working there. He's a New York-based doctor working with Medicine Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders. And what happens is this organization, Doctors Without Borders, it just seeks volunteers, doctors who have regular jobs, who basically apply for a leave from their own they're working at a hospital, they're working in a practice, and they go over there for only a couple of weeks at a time because Doctors Without Borders knows that these people are in the worst of circumstances, watching a tremendous amount of pain, suffering, and death. A lot of these people come back and suffer some form of post-traumatic stress syndrome. And this doctor had followed the protocol suggested by Doctors Without Borders, which is to basically self-isolate more or less and to do rigorous self-monitoring. He did. As soon as his temperature rose to 100.3, called health services. He was placed in quarantine. He's doing okay, not great right now. There's what they do is they provide an intense regimen of hydration, et cetera. He's in Bellevue. Following the press conference, and I don't know if I had mentioned this on Friday's show, but I had tweeted out just, I'm not tweeting that much these days, but it was clear at the press conference that Cuomo was desperate to get in on this. And I mean, it was pathetic. De Blasio was there, obviously. It's a city situation. De Blasio was more or less moderating the panel because De Blasio is not a doctor. And so he defers to the experts. Cuomo, desperate to be seen as the guy in charge, kept reiterating what the doctors were saying. Literally, it was, I mean, it was like, it reminded me of, with all due respect to my father, who I know is not listening, when I was 15 and having a conversation with some other adult, my father would cut me off to reiterate what I had just said.
If Andrew Cuomo reminds you of your father, I think this is starting to explain some of the roots of the obsession we have here.
This is the first time I have to say that Cuomo has responded, but it was just a sad. No, I can understand it. If there were 15, year olds up there instead of perhaps some of the most competent public health officials in the world.
Well, I think it's because to Obama's credit. Like, he hugged the nurse who was cleared of the symptoms, you know, the other day. And he's just said really consistently, we need to trust science on this not freak out. And the contrast was really amazing.
So Cuomo, I mean, I can give you a sense, this is complete conjecture on my part. But the moment that it became clear that there was an Ebola patient in New York, I would put the chances of Cuomo high-fiving or fist-bumping some of his campaign officials in his office somewhere around 98 to 99%. Complete conjecture on my part. But what is quite clear is that following that press conference, he huddled with his people and said, I can't let de Blasio be the face of this. We're not going to have an Ebola patient fly into Albany or Syracuse or Elmira. So I got to get out in front of this now. Who's the scummiest guy I can have a press conference with who's probably trying to put himself out in front of this too? Oh, great. Of course, Chris Christie. We control the Port Authority. We can talk about this. So they get up on Friday together and announce a program of automatically quarantining any aid workers who are returning from West Africa. They consult with none of the public health officials in New York City. Like I say, undoubtedly, some of the best public health officials in the world. They obviously don't consult the White House or any of the best public health officials we have nationally. And within a day, we hear from a nurse who returns from dealing with Ebola patients in Sierra Leone. And she is the first person to be quarantined by this Chris Christie, Andrew Cuomo, will this buy us an extra 4 points in our election in a week, administrations? And she writes an op-ed about her experience as she is in a tent, because she doesn't live in New Jersey. She lives in Maine. She's in a tent with like a little porta potty. Where she's being subjected to fairly inhumane conditions. She recounts the story of arriving at Newark Airport, tired, hungry, and confused. At one point, they take her temperature using a forehead scanner. It reads a temperature of 98. I was feeling physically healthy but emotionally exhausted. 3 hours passed. No one seemed to be in charge. No one would tell me what was going on and what would happen to me. I called my family to let them know I was okay. I was hungry and thirsty and asked for something to eat and drink. I was given a granola bar and some water. I wondered what I had done wrong. 4 hours after I landed at the airport, an official approached me with a forehead scanner. My cheeks were flushed. I was upset at being held with no explanation. The scanner recorded my temperature at 101. The female officer looked smug. "You have a fever now," she said. I explained that an oral thermometer would be more accurate and that the forehead scanner was recording an elevated temperature because I was flushed and upset. I was left alone in the room for another 3 hours. At around 7 p.m., I was told that I must go to a local hospital. 8 police cars escorted me to the University Hospital in Newark. Sirens blared, lights flashed. Again, I wondered what I had done wrong. I had spent a month watching children die alone. I had witnessed human tragedy unfold before my eyes. I had tried to help when much of the world has looked on and done nothing. At the hospital, I was escorted to a tent that sat outside of a building. The infectious disease and emergency department doctors took my temperature and other vitals and looked puzzled. "Your temperature is 98.6, they said. "You don't have a fever, but we were told you have a fever." After my temperature was recorded at 98.6 on the oral thermometer, the doctor decided to see what the forehead scanner recorded. It read 101. The doctor felt my neck and looked at my temperature again. "There's no way you have a fever," he said. "Your face is just flushed." My blood was taken and tested for Ebola. It came back negative. I sat alone in the isolation tent and thought of many colleagues who will return home to America and face the same ordeal. Will they be made to feel like criminals and prisoners? I recalled my last night at the Ebola Management Center in Sierra Leone. I was called in at midnight because a 10-year-old girl was having seizures. I coaxed crushed tablets of Tylenol and an anti-seizure medicine into her mouth as her body jolted in the bed. It was the hardest night of my life. I watched a young girl die in a tent away from her family. The epidemic continues to ravage West Africa. Recently, the WHO announced that as many as 15,000 people have died from Ebola. We need more healthcare workers to help fight the epidemic in West Africa. The U.S. must treat returning healthcare workers with dignity and humanity. The bottom line here is, you cannot protect Americans from Ebola to the extent at this point that there's any real danger to Americans. And again, if you want to wear a mask when you're traveling, it's a good idea because it will protect you from the flu. Otherwise, you're just going to look silly. The only way to stop an Ebola outbreak is to stop it in West Africa. The only way at this point to stop an outbreak in West Africa is to get volunteers to go to West Africa to stop the outbreak there. If you treat people who return from helping in West Africa as criminals instead of dedicated professionals who know better than anyone the danger of Ebola, you're not going to stop the outbreak in West Africa, and then we're all going to have some problems. So Cuomo and Christie instituted this policy. By Sunday night, Cuomo had backed off the policy somewhat and basically said, to the extent that they will be quarantined, they got to do so at home. And if a person loses pay because of work days missed, that worker will be compensated in some fashion, and state officials will talk to employers if necessary. I suppose it's possible that there can be some type of quarantine regime that can be set up that will not dissuade people from going and volunteering to help end this crisis in West Africa. But when morons like Christie and Cuomo, get together, I just don't know that we're going to get that type of policy. Meanwhile, on Sunday, Chris Christie was not backing down. He went on Fox and said, well, it was about 24 hours ago, I absolutely have no second thoughts about this. It's unclear if he wanted to do this with teachers as well. However, 24 hours later, Chris Christie apparently has had some second thoughts. And the woman who has been the nurse who was kept in this quarantine tent in New Jersey is going to be allowed to go back to Maine. What a moron. Just a bunch of morons. And this is basically, what we're now seeing in terms of, at least partially, in terms of our elections. We have elections at this point that are about virtually nothing other than a grab bag of gaffes. And you have politicians racing to be the ones who are going to not deal with the reality of Ebola, but address the most base fears of the electorate. Pathetic. It's pathetic. And we see this across the board. We see it with ISIS. We see it with terrorism. It's really just, it's bizarre, frankly. And then, of course, we've got the lunatic fringe, or really just about anybody in the right wing in this country, who are trying to stoke these fears. Guys like Ted Cruz's aide, Nick Muzin, who tweeted the other day, before Obamacare, there had never been a confirmed case of Ebola in the U.S. You know what else occurs to me? Before Ted Cruz was a senator,
that's right,
there had never been a confirmed case of Ebola in the U.S. And in fact, before Twitter, there had never been a confirmed case of Ebola in the U.S. And to be fair, before I even talked about Nick Muzin, well, I guess that's not true, actually.
We'll see what comes from that, Sam. Good job.
Larry Klayman was on WorldNet Daily a week or two ago, saying Obama has opened the door for Muslim terrorists to infect themselves with this deadly virus, illegally enter our country, and spread the disease widely.
See a rock, paper, scissor game between suicide vest and Ebola?
Yeah. Well, it's one thing to strap on the suicide vest. Who's in charge of infecting the guy with Ebola?
Yeah, seriously, how does that work?
I guess you got to go in as a healthcare worker.
Right.
Unbelievable. He goes on, Klayman apparently wrote, I'm not a racist, and neither are you, Klayman writes. Does anyone doubt that the former Alabama governor George Wallace was a racist after he banned blacks from attending the state's university in the 1960s? No. So too, can anyone refute that Obama's not even temporarily banning West Africans from entering the United States is also at least de facto racism? As this high-risk caper puts whites and others at risk. Whites and others.
I feel at risk as a white and other by this action.
I don't know if you're Jewiness, it says you're another, but you know what he's saying. Black people and brown people and Asian people and Native Americans and presumably Jews, they have a little bit more Ebola immunity. So it's really putting white people and others at risk at the expense of not even temporarily inconveniencing his fellow Africans. Wallace and Obama are both despicable and both to be condemned into the trash heap of history for their actions.
Even for you, Larry Klayman. Come on.
God.
Jesus Christ.
It's just...
I like it. I like it. It's like George Wallace, racist. Okay, so far so good. I'm on board.
Unbelievable. It's just sheer
banning
insanity.
Liberians from traveling into America. Also racist. Whoa.
Really just insane.
Usually there's a middle step before the
status Cuomo IMs. Before Obamacare, I never got laid. Thanks, Obama. No, really. Thanks, Obama.
You're welcome. Enjoy yourself. Got some publicly subsidized condoms coming on the way. Last year, baby. The midterms wrap up.
I want to read something from a listener, and we'll get to these elections and the story of the CIA protecting Nazis well beyond where we have had heard in the past.
Yeah.
We will also talk about the nation endorsement of the WFP line and this Louis Gohmert audio. But first, we got an email regarding these school shootings. Six people were shot at a Seattle high school. I believe this is around the, well, I think according to the email, around the 89th school shooting since Sandy Hook. I know the right wingers have contended that, like, you can't count ones that are accidental where someone just brought in a gun. Or you can't count when someone shoots themselves. Six people were shot at the Marysville Pilchuck High School in Seattle on Friday. 14-year-old student came in carrying, do we know what kind of gun it was? I believe it was a 44, a 40 caliber handgun. Killing two 14-year-old classmates, girls, and seriously wounding three others. He then either killed himself or was killed in a struggle with a teacher. The boy, Jalen Ray Freiberg, was reportedly popular. It's unclear, obviously, why he did this. From a prominent family on the Tulalip Indian Reservation. And I just want to read from this email. When I hear about school shootings, I've thought about it happening at my daughter's high school. Fortunately, she moved on from high school in 2012. And I know this is just confirmation bias, but on Friday, an upset kid shot several of his classmates in the lunchroom of my daughter's high school before killing himself. The common comment on TV Friday was how this is a reality for kids these days, but it didn't happen when we were kids. Yet I do remember Brenda Spencer opening fire on school kids in 79, killing two adults and wounding eight young children. That was the day before my 14th birthday, an inspiration for the Boomtown Rat song, I Don't Like Mondays. It was a rare event, but it did happen occasionally. This shooting at Marysville Pilchick High School, from what I'm told, makes the 89th school shooting since Sandy Hook. As I came home from work on Friday, I entered into Marysville, a large bedroom community with a lot of Boeing employees living there. I kept seeing small groups of high school kids milling about, looking shell-shocked. Now, the kid obviously did not acquire this gun directly. And there is a vote, a referendum on the ballot in Washington State. It's the only up or down vote on gun measures in this country this year. There are two ballot initiatives. One, Initiative 594, would require universal background checks for gun sales, no matter the venue. This probably would not have prevented this kid getting the gun, although we don't know the details yet. Nevertheless, it's the only rational. If you believe someone needs a background check to buy a gun at a gun store, why wouldn't you believe they need one to buy a gun anywhere else? It's the only rational response. Anti-rational gun safety activists have put up another ballot on, or referendum on the ballot, Initiative 591, which would require background checks in Washington State, or I should say prohibit background checks in Washington State, unless Congress passes a national standard that would restrict all regions equally. In other words, it's just put up there to confuse people. There is no rational reason. Unless you believe there should be no background checks whatsoever, there is no rational reason to not require background checks in any venue that sells a gun, period. Just unbelievable that children, parents, that society has to worry about these things as, you know, just part of normal life. And granted, you know, we're not talking of the dangers relative to driving in a car. But this is a danger where we know we can have some, even if it's a marginal impact. At what cost? At what possible cost? Just ridiculous. All right, let's get to some election roundup. As you know, Republicans are looking for a six-seat pickup. They need six seats to swing the Senate. Things like the CIA report, things like fast-track authority. The CIA reported torture. Republicans would love to spike that. The administration would probably too. And the administration would love fast-track authority to pass the TPP and its EU partner. And the Senate, I mean, a Republican-controlled Senate would certainly give them that authority. Then we've got judicial picks, Supreme Court justice picks, independent regulatory agency confirmations and stripping of what's left of Dodd-Frank, stripping of budgets for places like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Who knows? Maybe a grand bargain. There's all sorts of reasons why. Again, a rational person would not want the Republicans to take over the Senate. So Republicans need to pick up six races. There are two pickup opportunities that are basically already spoken for, Montana and West Virginia. That's happening. So you're down to four. You got South Dakota, where you've got Mike Rounds with a 14-point lead over Rick Wyland. I think the race is probably closer to that. Rounds is at 43. Wyland's at 29%. There's an independent running, Larry Pressler, with 16%. Pressler's voters would break towards Rounds more than they would to Wyland, but I think that vote is closer. So there's a chance. But let's, for the moment, say that that's one of three that the Republicans are going to pick up. So the Republicans need to win three out of seven other democratically held seats to get a majority. It either comes from Alaska, where, again, incredibly close. Arkansas, Cotton and Pryor, very close. Colorado, where Udall seems to be running behind Garner, but there's a lot of question as to the electorate being different, the Hispanic vote being undercounted, it has been in years. Iowa, Braley seems to have picked up a point and is very close with Jody Ernst. Louisiana, I think that's going to be tough. New Hampshire, Scotty B., not going to deliver for the Republicans. And North Carolina, where Kay Hagan has a slight lead over Tom Tillis. But almost all of those are within the margin of error. Now, Republicans need to win three out of those seven democratically held seats. However, it is possible that Democrats may take a couple of Republican seats. Georgia, Michelle Nunn seems to have a little bit of a lead over Perdue. Kansas, where that independent Orman, his lead has shrunk, but he still has a lead over Pat Roberts. And Kentucky, where National Democrats have basically decided to put money back into that race. They had announced last week that they were going to take it out. They were not going to put in another million. They ended up putting in about another 1.2. And so it remains to be seen, obviously. But we're going to follow it to the extent that we can follow it. And we're talking to the PCCC this afternoon about getting on board with their get-out-the-vote measures. I know that the Young Turks are doing something like that with them. We don't have the same resources, frankly, and we're moving this week, unfortunately. But we're going to, one way or another, we'll pass on information if you want to be involved in calling. Because ultimately, when you've got all these races, Colorado, Gardner has a 1% lead, likely voters. Iowa, Joni Ernst has a 3% lead over Bruce Braley. Kansas, Orman has a 1% lead over Pat Roberts. Arkansas, Cotton has a 2% lead. North Carolina, Hagan is tied, with Tillis. You've got five of these races are in the polls' margin of error. It's going to be about turnout. I mean, we've been saying this for a long time, but this is where the rubber meets the road. In Kentucky, McConnell has loaned himself $1.8 million. I think it's easy to read too much into this. he's obviously not that confident that he's not going to lend himself the money, and he's probably short on money. But you should note that in 2008, he did the same thing in the final days of his campaign and went on to win by 6 points against Bruce Lunsford. But like I said, there was a poll this week that showed him up only by 1 point. The Democratic Senate Campaign Committee sunk another $650,000 in there. And the Senate Majority PAC is going to up its contributions to about $850,000. So it remains to be seen. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we thought we would never have another Bush, or at least until my daughter's generation, to kick around, but that may not be the case. And a brief reminder why the grand bargain now, just even toying around with it, is biting some Democrats in the ass and may contribute to the loss of the Senate. Folks, we rely on your membership to do this show. And between the moving and sort of the little crisis I had last week, we're trying to get together our fundraising appeal. We've had a lot of members who have had to recently stop paying us because of financial problems. We lost a couple of people because Gamergate was too annoying for them. I share that sentiment.
As do I.
And
seriously.
But if you are listening to the show on a regular basis, you're enjoying it, please, it is your support that keeps this show going and makes this show possible. We're going to take a quick break. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link. I know there's a lot of other shows out there that ask you to do that, and you know, you got to make your choice as to which one you want to support. It's not a tremendous amount of money, but every little bit helps. It's the difference between, I don't know, us getting a higher speed internet service any given month or offsetting some of the bandwidth costs for the membership show. Like I say, we have a lot of people who get the show for virtually no fee or simply no fee because we don't want to lock anybody out. But anything you can do to support the program, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Buy the Majority Report blend. Want to be a part of the program? 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me at Majority FM. We're going to have a little bit of a debate here. I'm really of two minds. Should I vote for Howie Hawkins on the Green Party against Cuomo? Or should I vote for Cuomo on the WFP line? I don't know. Does it contradict the CETA formula of practical voting? I don't know. I will bare my soul to you after this. When we return, 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920. Take your IMs. If you're a libertarian, you want to tell me how we should not have a government attempting to deal with Ebola in West Africa, please, by all means, call in. Explain to me. If you're voting libertarian in this election, call in. Explain why. Always willing to engage in an intellectual conversation with libertarians who have some amount of conviction. I don't know. Maybe they're getting less and less. out there. I don't know. I understand why some of them may be a little nervous about trying to defend their libertarian positions, but now's your opportunity. 646-257-3920. We'll be back in a minute.